presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
There's a concept in politics, and Lord knows we don't talk about politics during this show, but there's a concept in politics called a third rail issue. Now, the best I can tell, here's what a third rail issue is. It's an issue that's so controversial. It's an issue that's so problematic and a problem potentially that's so difficult to solve. If you're a politician, it's kind of not even worth going there. That just by stepping in that direction, you kind of put yourself in a position where you come out worse for having stepped into it. So therefore, third rail issues are sort of better left alone. If you follow Georgia football pretty closely, especially if you're pretty connected to the media around Georgia football, you know that our third rail topic right now is probably Justin Fields. There's just a lot of passion on both sides of this issue. And I think I kind of understand what that's about. I mean, if you're a Georgia fan who's maybe a little angry at Fields, I think your feeling is, hey, you came here to Georgia, but you didn't stay very long. You didn't stick out the full competition against Jake Fromm. You kind of came here for a year, didn't work out for you, and then you kind of left right after that. And if you're a pro Fields guy, you say, hey, he came to Georgia. Georgia didn't really use him as well as it could have. Maybe should have given him more playing time or maybe not recruited him at all if that was what they were going to do. And all of a sudden now Justin Fields goes to Ohio State. He's doing really well over there, and maybe that's a symbol that Georgia really didn't use Fields properly while he was here. And those are kind of the two sides of the story, and you sort of understand kind of where those, I hate to say it this way, but where those battle lines get drawn. The pro-Georgia folks who don't think that Fields gave Georgia enough of a chance, the pro-Fields folks who don't think that Georgia gave Fields enough of a chance, those are the two distinctly different groups in all of this. But if you don't hear anything else that I say, and given the natural tension that comes up around the Justin Fields topic, it's really easy to sort of tune this out and kind of go into the camp that you already find yourself in. Would you do me a favor? Would you try to at least hear me out on one thing? And it's simply this point. Bad situations don't necessarily require bad guys. I think it's pretty obvious the way the field situation played out that it was not a good situation. Georgia brought him in. Kirby Smart told you last year the plan is there is no plan. When you have high-profile quarterbacks on the same roster at the same time, seems like in the future you better have a plan for how those guys are going to get used. Not having a plan for Justin Fields is probably a mistake. Seeing a talent like this now get away, have great success somewhere else, that's probably not the greatest look for Georgia. It's just admittedly true. This is kind of a bad situation. But bad situations don't necessarily require bad guys. Let me kind of double down on this point. Justin Fields last night in Atlanta as part of the College Football Awards. A lot of reporters gather around him. A lot of questions get asked. Hey, Justin, are you surprised to see the way the Georgia offense struggled this year? And Justin Fields gave an answer. Here's what Fields had to say.
Yeah, I think it is just with the way the guys they have on offense. I know they have great running backs. Jake's a great quarterback, smart guy. They have great athletes on the outside, but I think it's just pretty much the injuries that they've had this year that has probably slowed them down. But I think their offense has great talent and great opportunity to do good.
So listen, I think that's a pretty classy answer. And pretty much anytime Fields has been asked about Georgia, the answer that he's given has been a pretty classy answer. Steve Hummer from the AJC went to visit with him before the Wisconsin game a few weeks ago. Kind of classy answers all the way through. Right there, Georgia offense. I mean, he had every opportunity to say, yeah, it's struggling because I'm not a part of it. Have you seen how good I'm doing at Ohio State? But Fields doesn't really do that. Now, listen, the way that it all worked out for Fields at Georgia, I think is kind of bad. And you can decide who takes the most blame for that, but that doesn't mean that Fields is a bad guy. You can hate the way the field situation worked out at Georgia, but I don't think you have much reason to hate Justin Fields. Now, some of the adults around Fields, could you criticize some of their behavior from time to time? You might could if you really want to get deep in the issue, but Fields himself, the best that I can tell, has never been anything other than a class act. And, by the way, much the same way that you can't hate Fields for the way that this thing went down for Georgia, I also think it's true that you can't use Fields to hate on UGA, because there's a certain sense of this entire last sort of 18 months for him that I think that he also probably bears some responsibility for. It wasn't just Georgia who brought him in. It was Fields who chose to come to UGA, knowing full well that Georgia had an established quarterback already in place. And this isn't just Monday morning quarterbacking after the fact. One of the guys who knew Justin Fields very well, Trent Dilfer, the former head coach of the Elite 11 quarterback camp, said way back in February that Fields' decision to transfer, by the way, before he went to Ohio State, that this is something he sort of saw coming at the time. Here's what Trent Dilfer told us around the time of the Super Bowl.
I was probably the only guy that wasn't surprised. I told Justin I didn't think it was a good move to go there. He's a unique talent, one of the best I've ever seen. But, I mean, these kids, they think that when they're in high school, they're just going to go in and beat out the stud that's ahead of them. And Jake's a great player. And Jake's a guy that not only is a great player, but he's a player that gets the most out of everybody, and people gravitate towards him. So the dual thing was never going to work, you know, having the two quarterbacks splitting time. And Jake, because of his command of the offense and the success he had as a freshman, to me, I just didn't think it was a good move. I kind of like what Justin's done now. These kids should have the ability to move and go develop as players.
So the bottom line for me on this is bad situation when a guy like Fields comes to Georgia, doesn't find a home, but bad situations don't mean bad guys. Georgia wasn't sinister because it didn't play Fields more last year. It had a starting quarterback. Trent Dilfer says maybe Justin Fields should have known that going in. Frankly, though, no harm, no foul. Fields has moved on. He's been classy in every step of the way since then. Hasn't taken any opportunity to kind of trash Georgia for what went on. And Georgia made a decision that even someone like Trent Dilfer, who knew both quarterbacks, said was reasonable to make. Now, if you're a UGA fan, you hope in future years the success that Georgia has on the field mirrors the success that Fields is having right now. But whether that happens or doesn't, there's still a lot of story on that left to be written. So I wanted to bring Fields up at least just briefly to say, given every chance, he's chosen to be classy. No reason for Dog fans to hate Fields, and frankly, no reason for Fields fans to use the Fields story to hate Georgia. I don't see room for that on either side. With that in mind, let me kind of shift gears and talk about something completely different here for a moment. I think there is news involving both Georgia coordinators right now, for at least in roundabout ways. Let me begin with this when it comes to Dan Lanning. There have been some rumors because of Lanning's relationship with Mike Norvell, having worked with him at Memphis, that Lanning might be a candidate for various jobs, including maybe going with Norvell to Florida State and be his defensive coordinator there. That is apparently not going to happen based on some reporting that's been out there as of late. Here is what one reporter said about the next defensive coordinator at Florida State. This is John Martin on Twitter, a part of the Blue Check Brigade, saying, source, Memphis defensive coordinator Adam Fuller is leaving Memphis and following Mike Norvell to Florida State. He was a big part of the turnaround of the Memphis defense. So it looks like based on that, any concern that Georgia fans might have had about Lanning going back to work with his friend Norvell and trying to resurrect the Florida State program, that's apparently not going to be a concern. That's apparently not going to be something worth worrying about. And I had somebody reach out to me on video a few minutes ago and said, BA, not a lot good is happening for the program right now. And I think that's fundamentally untrue. I think Georgia's ability to both find Dan Lanning as a defensive coordinator a couple of years ago, bring him onto the staff and promoting him to defensive coordinator for last season, and now be able to retain him going into 2020, at least that's certainly the sense of what's going to happen right now, I think that is a very good thing for Georgia. Kirby Smart's eye for talent, noticing Lanning as an up-and-coming coach, Lanning blossoming as a first-year defensive coordinator. By the way, something that Alabama would love to have been able to say for both of its most recent first-year defensive coordinators. Lanning's success at Georgia, a stark contrast to what Golding did this year with the Crimson Tide, what Tosh Lapoy did the year before that with the Crimson Tide. Maybe Kirby Smart's either better at sort of bringing on these young first-year coordinators, or maybe just Lanning's just a better coach all the way around. I think the fact that Lanning may be staying at Georgia is in and of itself pretty good news right now. As a way of kind of furthering that point for a moment, let me let you hear a little bit from Dan Lanning, and I'm going to put the entire speech up. When I post the show, we do a podcast post at theworldfamousdognation.com each and every day. I'll give you a chance to hear the full speech when I post this show, but I pulled out a small clip of Lanning speaking at the Broyles Award banquet, and this is funny, but it's also the kind of thing that helps you get to know Lanning better. We don't hear from a lot of the Georgia assistant coaches too much, so sometimes we don't really know a ton about them. But it certainly sounds like Georgia's got itself a pretty good DC in Lanning. And keeping him from being the Florida State defensive coordinator, which apparently Georgia has done, I think it's a pretty big win for the program overall. So with that in mind, here is a terrific, terrific story from Dan Lanning about a big moment he faced in his first year as DC. You're going to like this.
You know, for me as a young coach, you know, there's moments like this past season. You know, one of the moments that stick out to me is playing in the Notre Dame game. It's coming down to the final drive. You know, we're a team that likes to match personnel. We want to run the right personnel out on the field to match what a team's going to do offensively. And we're in the huddle, and it's the last defensive play of that game. We run out the personnel on the field. We give them the call, let them know what we're going to run. And I realize about halfway through that we've got one of the wrong guys running on the field. And there's 93,000 people. The atmosphere is electric. And I run out in the middle of the field to grab the guy and pull him back, and it's a timeout. But as I'm running back to the sideline to get the right guy in, I can see Coach Smart saying, "You can't do that. What are you doing?" And I'm sitting there realizing to myself, dang, I was an elementary PE school teacher not that long ago. How did I sneak my way into the middle of this field? Vince Dooley Field, Sanford Stadium, on one of the biggest stages in college football. Unbelievably blessed and fortunate.
I mean, is that not great? What an unbelievable story that is. Funny to think about a mistake being made. We know how much Georgia substitutes on defense. I've often wondered how easy or difficult that is to keep up with all that if you're one of the coaches. Apparently, in that particular moment for Lanning, not that easy to do. And we've seen plenty of examples where Kirby Smart has given plenty of an earful to a UGA assistant for whatever reason. Apparently, Lanning on the receiving end of that one this time, and his thought process in that moment, at least as he retells the story there, total gratitude about the fact that he's graduated from being a, as he says, elementary school PE teacher to now being the leader of one of the best defenses in all of the country. I think that's really good stuff for Dan Lanning. As I said before, it's an eye for talent for Kirby Smart for recognizing him as an up-and-comer, bringing him in. From the first moment he was here, you could tell that he was absolutely cut from the same cloth as Glenn Schumann and Kirby and all these guys. Hungry to recruit, tenacious on the field, and the fact that George is going to keep him in the fold, don't lose sight of that. At least the sense is that George is going to keep him in the fold. Don't lose sight of that as a big win for the program right now. One more thing on coordinators, and we're going to move on because I know we're kind of going a little long here. Somebody sent me a photo of James Coley in-house last night with the terrific Georgia receiver Marcus Roseman. Cortez Hankton, the wide receivers coach, also a part of that there as well. And, you know, listen, you know, I tweeted about this. Obviously, Roseman is one of the big gets for Georgia in its 2020 class. And if you're hoping for a big turnaround from the receiver position, then the presence of Roseman is obviously a major part of that. Now, I know the flip side of that coin, too. When some of you see Coley in that photo, you're going to say, well, I guess that means that Georgia's not really making the change at offensive coordinator. I guess that means that Coley's going to be back and be the guy again for the 2020 season. And certainly that's the sense I get from that, too, that those talks of how much Georgia might be pursuing this guy or that guy or the other guy or whomever, that you know, Coley has maybe always been more in Kirby's plans than maybe some fans wanted him to be. And maybe that's the right thing to do, too, because here's the one thing that seeing that photo kind of brings to mind for me. Georgia would not be sending Coley into a living room like Roseman, given how important Roseman is as a 2020 recruit. Georgia wouldn't be sending him into that living room unless it knew that Coley would have some value there. Roseman as a player is just too important. You know, for Georgia, who has a desperate need for receiver, Roseman, at least on paper, is the best of the bunch. The best that Georgia currently has in terms of its commitment group, with all due respect to the others, the best of the ones that Georgia might be able to bring in. Roseman's the lead dog there. So if you want to put the best foot forward for him, you got to send coaches in there that he trusts. And apparently that's Cortez Hankton. Apparently that's James Coley, who's kind of always had that way down there with South Florida. So I want to try to be fair and balanced about this. Obviously, I've had my say and my piece on the Georgia offense, the things in which I think it could do better, the ways in which I think it could improve for this season. And obviously, when an offense struggles with it, the Georgia offense did this year, a guy like James Coley is going to be at the center of that conversation because he is by title the offensive coordinator. But it's also fair to point out the ways in which Smart still sees the value in him. As a recruiter, developing that relationship with Marcus Roseman, potentially one of the catalysts for improved play for Georgia in 2020 and beyond. So do with that what you will. Coley at the center of the debate and the discussion among fans right now, but still a valuable part of Kirby Smart's coaching apparatus. And the ultimate story of who was right, the fans who criticized the offense, Kirby Smart seemingly willing to stay patient with it, it may take us a little while to know the answer to that question. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we're available as a podcast wherever you find them, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player, and the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have all of you with us. And I'll tell my radio and podcast audience something that you can't see, but I'm still really proud of. I've been talking about this on video today, the fact that we've got a brand new desk here. Very big, very fancy, fancier than I deserve by a long shot, but I'm really proud of it. So glad to be able to showcase this today, and glad to be having a good time with all of you on the program. Speaking of having a good time, can I tell you about something here real quick that I know you'll find to be really fun? And I want to make sure you take advantage of this while this opportunity exists. I have been to Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa during this time of year when it's cold outside and the fire's like crackling in the fireplace. The last time I stayed there, I had a fireplace in my room. That's how nice it is. I also have the gorgeous fireplaces in the big, you know, well-appointed lobby right when you walk in. Huge, you know, stone fireplaces. There are Christmas decorations everywhere, trees. The whole thing is just beautiful, beautiful this time of year. And in honor of Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa celebrating its 25th anniversary, you can also save 25% off on select dates here this month. Let me give the promo code to use for this. And please act now so you don't miss out on this really fun offer. It's BVR25. That's BVR25. Go to BrasstownValley.com and find out more about that. Saving 25% off select dates here at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa here during the month of December. For our audience, I will tell you we've got Bill Bender coming up in the sporting news. Good conversation with Bill on the way. We get into his thoughts on what went wrong for Georgia this year, what's still right about the UGA program, a little bit of a preview of the Sugar Bowl, and hope you'll stay tuned for the end of this. Really interesting insight into Herschel Walker, who Bill was recently a part of, as with his publication there, The Sporting News, naming Walker the greatest player in the history of college football on the anniversary here, 150 years worth of college football. Herschel Walker gets the nod as the all-time greatest player. Bill Bender says some great things about that. We will do that coming up with Bill Bender here today on Dog Nation Daily. Before that, let's go around the doghouse here today, brought to you by Online Trading Academy. And just as we were getting ready to go on the air this morning, Matt Zenitz from AL.com, and Matt's usually pretty good about transfer portal stuff. We don't typically have much reason to doubt him on this. He's been kind of a news source on the transfer portal, and that's a pretty robust business to be in these days. But Matt putting out there that according to what he has been made aware of, that Georgia linebacker Robert Beal has entered the transfer portal. Obviously, people remember Beal as a former big-time recruit for the Dogs, a part of the 2017 class. And I mentioned this briefly a moment ago when I was speaking to just our video audience, and I'll kind of restate some of this now. You know, Beal's obviously a pretty impressive talent, and when we have seen him on the field, there have been moments when that talent has flashed here at Georgia. Ultimately, though, there's a nature of this that just sort of feels unavoidable, and the reason why the Beal thing feels unavoidable is you can make a case that Georgia may have recruited outside linebackers better than any program maybe ever, certainly in recent years, and some of those guys have really flashed. And I was listening to some of the audio this morning that, you know, Kirby Smart has given this year when it comes to Azeez Ojulari. The fact that it became pretty apparent last year's Sugar Bowl that Ojulari coming off his injury was going to be a real factor for the Dogs in 2019, and he lived up to the hype. He added weight. He was in great shape. He was the kind of guy that you could play, you know, as a run stopper or a potential pass rusher. He wasn't one of those guys you felt the need to sub out of games. Nolan Smith was only a freshman this year, but he was smart. He was the kind of guy that picked up the offense quickly. Picked up the defense quickly, understanding what opposing offenses are going to do. He was the kind of guy you couldn't keep off of fields. Jermaine Johnson, to a certain extent, the junior college transfer, was very much the same way. Adam Anderson, as kind of that designated pass rusher, he had a role. And just given that depth, there wasn't going to be room for everybody. And Robert Beal, before the season began, I should say Brenton Cox before the season began, decided there wasn't room for him. Robert Beal, maybe now deciding there's not room for him here either. I don't wish these guys out the door, nor do I attempt to push them out the door. But there is a certain collateral damage to the presence of the transfer portal that Georgia's just going to have to deal with. And it's not going to be treated on this show like as a calamity every single time someone decides that there are greener pastures somewhere else. Now, I think there is a certain integrity sometimes to sticking things out, and I think that players more often than not may find that the new home that they gravitate towards isn't quite as nice and friendly as they thought it was going to be, but players ought to be free to make that decision. Beal has made this decision right here. Georgia's deep at outside linebacker. Beal has decided that he'll be better off somewhere else, and he very well might be. We're not mad at him for making that decision, nor are we going to be panicked when Georgia names pop up. This likely will not be the last one here during this offseason, and it may not be the last one here during the next few days. We're just in that kind of time of year. And as I said before, we're not going to treat all these as they happen as disasters, calamities, reasons to panic. This is a function of college football in 2019, and how you navigate these modern waters is the job of a football coach, and it's a job that I think the Kirby Smart is fully prepared for. It's Around the Doghouse. It's presented today by Online Trading Academy, and of course, we all want more money, especially this time of year. You're starting to think about 2020 vacations. You got holiday gifts to buy. You really got all of that kind of stuff, and one way or another, I think we know that the markets are the source for the best solution to how we get more money. But the problem we have sometimes is we don't know how the markets work. We don't know what to invest in. Well, what Online Trading Academy would say is the best first decision you can make is the decision to invest in yourself. That means learning how the markets work. Online Trading Academy provides that, both in the classroom and online. They'll give you information about a variety of trading styles across an entire spectrum of asset classes. You can really kind of get there, get your hands dirty for what the markets look like, how they work, and you can make money no matter which direction the market may be moving at any given moment. So check them out online. It's tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. That's tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. And it's great to have you here on Dog Nation Daily today, and hope you enjoy Bill Bender right now. Terrific writer for the Sporting News, a fun voice around the sport of college football. Always a great time to talk to him. It is Bill Bender here from the Sporting News. Bill, we appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily. I'm sure you're catching your breath as we kind of go into that lull in between the end of the conference championship games and the start of the bowl season. And so knowing time is precious here around the holidays, we appreciate you spending some of that with us and hope you're doing well.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing really well, or at least I guess the audience would say they're doing about as well as could be expected, given the fact that Georgia's not where it wants to be in the college football playoff. It is in the Sugar Bowl instead, and we'll get into that matchup with Baylor, I guess, here coming up in a moment. But, Bill, anytime we're lucky enough to have a national voice on the show, someone who's kind of outside the bubble of the team that we are closest to, we're always curious and eager to get an outside perspective. So things this year for Georgia compared to preseason expectations went wrong. I don't think it's unfair to say they kind of went horribly wrong, just given the fact that Georgia, by how it looked against LSU, far removed from the true best elite teams in the country. What were your overall thoughts on Georgia this year?
Well, it's obviously disappointing when you don't make the playoff with that much talent, but I think the one hole we talked about in the preseason showed up. You know, they just had young and inexperienced receivers. And that made it hard. It made it hard in the South Carolina game. And it made it hard when you had that. They were just beat up at the finish line. You know, they limped to the finish line a little bit, and LSU exposed that. And I think, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, Georgia's fine. The defense was elite. But I think just some things offensively, and maybe that'll cause some. When you watch what LSU did, I'm wondering how Georgia will kind of revamp their offensive philosophy in the offseason. Because LSU, man, it's been something to watch.
Yeah, it really has been. And I guess, Bill, the concern from some Georgia fans is given the early evidence, you know, James Coley's still out recruiting, would-be offensive names or kind of other places. Certainly Kirby Smart with his comments. Now, he doesn't really tip his cards too much with his comments anyway, but certainly the comments and the after effect of the LSU game, no real mea culpa about the offensive style that Georgia chose to use. there's a sense around here now that Georgia, instead of making LSU-style changes, may kind of double down on the philosophy that has been in place, the one that worked very well in 2017, not quite as well in 2019. I mean, what are your thoughts on the possibility that Georgia may look at all the evidence in front of it, what it didn't do, what other teams have done, and decide that better players executing this game plan, or maybe a better execution of the current game plan, is the way to go, instead of trying to copy and be a little bit more like what LSU was this year and what Alabama maybe was in 2018?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing, right? You got to wonder how they're going to adjust to that. And I think Alabama, the gap has been closed a little bit collectively. And I say that Georgia's gotten better. LSU finally beat them. Auburn beat them this year. You know, Florida's going to have a team in the New Year's Day Six Bowl. That's five teams in the SEC that I think are capable of winning a conference championship right now. And I don't think any other conference can say that, that has a kind of playoff stake. I mean, maybe five teams could win the Pac-12, but I think Oregon's going to continue to get better. Until Ohio State, Oklahoma, or Clemson doesn't win those conferences, I'm going to keep picking them. So that's why I'm telling you, this offseason, the SEC will be a little more interesting than usual, because all five of those teams will feel pretty good on some level. And I think that's why this bowl game is kind of important for Georgia. I don't know if you guys want to go into the offseason feeling like you did last year after Texas. They need to take care of business with Baylor.
That's really interesting that you say that, because that's actually the next place I wanted to take this discussion, which is that bowl game against Baylor. Obviously last year, and to people outside, you know, the sort of circle of Georgia fandom, this sounds like an excuse, but certainly there was, I think, less of a focus and an effort and a sense of determination put forth against Texas than maybe some of the other games. And by the way, it was the Georgia fans themselves who were the most upset about that after the game was over with. I brought on national media people after the Sugar Bowl last year, and there was this, you know, thought by some of the sort of the national folks of, oh, it's not a big deal, Georgia's still a contender in 2020, but Georgia fans themselves were actually pretty mad about the way the team played against Texas. However, in the early stages of talk about the Sugar Bowl, Bill, I sort of get the sense that Georgia's focused on this game in a different way than it was a year ago. Kirby Smart's been pretty candid about how he's talked about the level of focus needed for a game like this, the kinds of players more likely to kind of give that focus. And I do think that maybe there will be a sense of, hey, last year this was treated like a consolation game, but this year probably can't do that, given that how you do anything, sort of how you do everything, and Georgia not sharp in last year's Sugar Bowl, also not sharp for large measure for a good portion of the 2019 season. So I sort of get the sense, and at least I think Georgia fans are hopeful of this, I sort of get the sense that the Sugar Bowl may be circled in red ink this year for the Dogs, maybe a little bit more than maybe it was last season.
I do. I agree with that. And I think, you know, it's one of those deals where, you want to win the bowl game. You want to create some positive momentum for next year, and you want to keep Georgia in there. I mean, this is 3 years in a row that Georgia was in the playoff hunt. They made it 1 year. Last year they were there till the final weekend. This year they were there till the final weekend. As long as they continue to win the SEC East, they'll be in position to make the playoffs. Winning the SEC East isn't good enough for this team right now. And I understand that from the expectations. You've had enough talent, especially on the defensive side of the ball this year, to go win national championships. And LSU may do that. I mean, in fact, our bowl projections are up, Brandon, and I've got them winning it.
Okay.
I've got the LSU Tigers winning the national championship.
Okay.
Because I think, do you think they're the best team? I do.
I tell you this, I knew they were good seeing them in person on Saturday. I will admit that they were way better in person than I kind of expected them to be. You know, I kind of lumped LSU, Ohio State, Clemson in kind of one group there of kind of the three elite teams. But given the way that, you know, Stingley, the freshman defensive back, is coming on in a huge, huge way right now, which makes that defense suddenly feel a little bit different. Burrow is one of the best quarterbacks I've seen in person. So if I'm going to do a bowl confidence deal, or if I'm going to make my playoff picks right now, maybe it's recency bias on having just seen them look pretty impressive in the last game I attended. But yeah, Bill, right now LSU would be my pick to win it all.
Yeah, and I think that's the next step for Georgia is, are you going to be next?
Yeah.
Alabama's not as vulnerable as others think. I think they're still going to have plenty of talent. coming in there that they'll be able to compete. But again, I mean, we've seen them get knocked out now by Clemson and LSU, and Auburn felt that. And I think next year with their tough schedule, it'll be interesting to see.
No, I think that's exactly right. Well, the time we have left, I want to squeeze in one more topic. And I talked about this on the show a couple of weeks ago, and we were kind of, you know, busy, didn't have time to maybe get into it then as much as I'd like to have. But obviously, in honor of the college football 150th anniversary, Sporting News had some really interesting rankings. And in one of those rankings, Herschel Walker came in as the number one player of the last 150 years. And in particular, the most interesting part of that for me was the way in which you wrote about it in kind of the write-up of that. That it's not necessarily a surprise to see Herschel at or near the top of a list like this, but after all these years, to see the prolific nature of the way that he collected votes from people outside even the Southeast, you know, nationally minded type folks, it still seems like that the legacy of Walker as a player lives on pretty well here, which is obviously a nice thing for Georgia fans to be able to hear. But I was hoping you might speak a couple of words about what you wrote, which is that even though it's been since 1982 since Herschel played the game, I'm myself barely old enough to have remembered him playing, and really for the most part don't remember the glory days of Herschel Walker as a player. Yet still, the legend kind of lives on. What does that mean to you to kind of know that's true?
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. It's awesome to see that he was able to do that. And, I should have had you vote on that, too. I apologize. But
no worries.
We had 50-some votes on it from people I talked to throughout the year. And it was just a wide margin. If you did an NFL top 10, the margin wouldn't be that big from, you know, like a Jim Brown to a Tom Brady. But it was a fun top 10 to do, not just Herschel. It was running back heavy. But I kept telling people, these are guys that made the top 10, Herschel, Barry Sanders, Charles Woodson, Jim Thorpe, Brett Grange, that regardless of what decade that was or what generation, it was like, I always describe it as this, that was the best player on the field.
Yeah.
And everybody knew it when they walked into the stadium. Once you saw that guy, you're like, that's the best player on the field. Herschel Walker had that kind of effect, and he still does today. I mean, I watched the old clips, and I'm thinking, how did people tackle that guy? He looks so much faster, bigger, stronger than everybody else on the field.
No, I think that's absolutely well said. Bill, we really appreciate your time. We love the work that you do there for the Sporting News. Such a terrific voice, and obviously someone who cares deeply about this sport, but also able to provide an analysis there as well. For the people who want to read more, whether it's the look at Walker or some of the early previews of these bowls, where can people find the work that you're doing online?
Under 92 at Sporting News. It's been a lot of fun compiling all that 150 stuff. Still up there, so check it out. And,
we will.
We'll get into the bowls, and as always, I won't be able to see it the championship game this year, I don't think, but maybe next year, and it's always good to talk to you.
Yeah, Bill, you as well. Thanks so much for your time. We'll look forward to catching up with you soon.
Hey, take care.
Good stuff there from Bill Benner from the Sporting News, and I'm glad we got a chance to talk to Bill about that involving Herschel Walker, because, you know, when it first came out, that was like one of the things that kind of struck me was, wow, you know, this legend still lives on. Because one of the things that sometimes is sort of hard to know, and when you kind of live deep within the bubble, I mean, I do Dog Nation daily every single day. There's no one more, I guess, steadfastly placed within the bubble of Dog Nation than me. Sometimes you wonder, what do other people think about Herschel Walker? You know, how much do other people know about Georgia football? You know, how recognizable is that Georgia G other places? We've always kind of heard the old jokes of, you know, if you go too far north, too far west, people think that Georgia football helmet is a Packers helmet painted red. And, you know, we kind of understand what that's all about. And so sometimes it's difficult to know which parts of the heritage that we all hold dear, which parts of those really do translate to people outside of our footprint, outside of our, for lack of a better phrase, bubble. And as Bill Benner explains there, not just him, but 50-something people stretched out across the country voting for the best player of all time. It was Walker himself who got the vote nod there and was able to do so by the pretty sizable margin. So kind of cool to see, you know, someone like me, 42 years old, not necessarily old enough to have remembered the Herschel Walker career. I saw him play like once or so and have a vague memory of that. But you know, my Herschel Walker experience are more the stories I was told by my dad or my grandfathers or, you know, people like that. That's more my connection to Herschel Walker. And yet all these years later, you know, miles and miles away from the state of Georgia, that career of Herschel Walker is still revered. For me, that's a really nice thing to be able to think about. One more thing about what Bill Bender said. We'll move on with the rest of the program. It's interesting to hear him kind of lay it out there, that challenge to Georgia to get better offensively. Obviously, he still sees Georgia as very much a part of the national championship picture, but maybe to make that picture a little bit more complete, a little bit more full, you know, Georgia does have to make those alterations, those slight changes, philosophically maybe more so than strategically, because I think most of us believe that the Georgia offense we saw on the field this year was not so much the vision of what James Coley was doing from a play-calling standpoint as it was the vision of what Kirby Smart had put together from an overarching philosophical standpoint, that he wants football to be played a certain kind of way. He wants football to be played a certain kind of way, and the offensive coordinator, which is James Coley now, whether it was Jim Chaney before that, was kind of asked to perform in that way and in that manner. And it certainly seems like when you listen to a guy like Bill Bender talk, for Georgia to take that next step, there might be some slight changes that need to be made. Now, of course, if Kirby Smart were sitting here and he were being candid, he says, no, listen, we just got to have a couple more recruiting wins go our way, stockpile a little bit more talent, keep adding these offensive linemen, keep adding these running backs, find a few more dynamic playmakers at the wide receiver position. Obviously, that's what Jeff Sintel is spending a lot of his time writing about right now, Georgia's pursuit of doing just that. Smart might have a slightly different take on that, but it's interesting to hear what Bill Bender said on that subject. And of course, always interesting to have Bill Bender from the Sporting News here as a part of Dog Nation Daily. Let me also say this. In honor of Herschel Walker and the words that Bender just spoke about him, it seems appropriate to remind you that the coach who led Herschel Walker to great success in a Georgia uniform and certainly was a contributor in Walker's ultimate legacy as being the greatest college football player of all time. Well, Coach Dooley will help tell some of the stories about that and be there to sign books for you at various Krogers around the Atlanta and North Georgia area here this holiday season. This is a tradition that's been going on for a long time at Kroger. And of course, Dog Nation's really proud to be a part of that as well. You can go to dognation.com and find out more about the Coach Dooley book signings here during this holiday season. I will also tell you in particular that if you're listening right now, especially if you're listening live, still time for you to make your plans to be with Coach Dooley today in Macon. It's 5928 Zebulon Road in Macon. It's going to be there today from 5 to 6 p.m. Now, this is not the only book signing. There are a total of 10 of these here through the month of December. You can find the full list at dognation.com. But in particular today, 5928 Zebulon Road in Macon, Coach Dooley's written some great books. He'll sign those for you. It's a great holiday gift, great chance for you to meet a true college football legend. It happens at Kroger there here this holiday season. And, of course, Dog Nation always proud to partner with Kroger and Coach Dooley here during the month of December, and I hope you'll look forward to checking that out.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff there from Bill Bender. Really appreciate him being a part of the program. I hope you will read the stuff that Bill's doing there at the Sporting News. It's always a lot of fun. Something else that's a lot of fun, our friends at Royal Caribbean, the fact they're turning 50 years bold this year. It's a half century worth of really making cruise destinations, cruise vacations, the most fun they can possibly be. And listen, one of the things that you can experience when you take a Royal Caribbean vacation that's really unlike anything else, it's Perfect Day Coco Cay. This is a private oasis right there in the Bahamas. There's a thrill side, which is fun and filled with slides and all kinds of just thrilling entertainment. There's a chill side, you know, cabanas like right there in the water, you know, kind of everything else that goes along with that. This is an exclusive to Royal Caribbean. One of the fun things about that is some of the ships that sail there go right out of Port Canaveral. And if you've never been on a cruise vacation before and you're listening to me right now, it could be that Port Canaveral, just outside of Orlando, is the perfect port for you to go to take your first cruise vacation, because so many of those ships are going to take you right to Perfect Day Coco Cay, experience that private oasis, that amazing, amazing vacation experience. And it's a short drive from where I live right here in the Atlanta area. So please make sure you check that out. Go to RoyalCaribbean.com, find out more about Perfect Day Coco Cay, get in touch with a travel advisor, and book the vacation that I know that you need. So there was a weird rumor that kind of came up. If you follow the NFL, one of the things that you're probably aware of is that Jason Garrett, the current Dallas Cowboys coach, may not be current Cowboys coach for much longer. His job probably in jeopardy. The Cowboys have kind of been one of the more underachieving teams in the NFL this year, and it could be that the Cowboys' job comes open. You also are probably aware, if you ever watch like the hot take ESPN shows, like the Stephen A. Smith stuff or the Skip Bayless stuff on the other network or whatever else, the Cowboys are one of those teams that everybody on TV has to have a big opinion about. So when a job like that becomes available, you're going to have big rumors as to who might be the one that fills that job. We've heard about Urban Meyer. We've heard about Oklahoma coach Lincoln Riley. And I guess, and maybe it's Daniel Jeremiah who's leading the way on this, but there's also now the rumor that maybe Dan Mullen might get involved in this discussion. Now, y'all know I'm skeptical of Mullen, so take all of this with a grain of salt if you'd like to. But I'm not even quite so sure that Dak Prescott ought to be the Cowboys' quarterback of the future. When I watch Prescott, I see a quarterback who's averages grits. But even if I'm wrong about that, I definitely don't think you should pick the next Cowboys coach because it's someone who's familiar with, comfortable with Dak Prescott. But nonetheless, that rumor is out there. I have a hard time imagining Dan Mullen as the next Cowboys coach. But nonetheless, he was asked about this by some reporters this week, TV-type guys, and the answer that Mullen gave was somewhere along the lines of, I haven't been contacted by any NFL team, but I guess if I was, I would consider that then. I'm essentially paraphrasing what Mullen had to say, not exactly shooting down the notion that he'd be a candidate for an NFL job, but also, you know, leaving himself some wiggle room to say he hasn't been contacted yet. I think this is really interesting. Now, I'm going to read way too much into this, so as I said before, you know, you can do with this what you will. This is just maybe my own personal hill to die on. NFL rumors can work one of two ways. It's either something that would hurt a coach in recruiting. You don't want to go there because so-and-so is leaving. For instance, the fact that James Franklin was maybe rumored to leave Penn State at one point in time may have hurt him with some recruits. Lincoln Riley potentially rumored to leave Oklahoma. That may hurt him with some recruits. Or, and maybe this is the way that Dan Mullen feels about this, the fact that you're connected to the Cowboys job, especially if it's not real and you're not really going to go there, but to be mentioned in those circles, apparently Mullen must think this helps him in recruiting. Otherwise, it seems like he'd want to try to shoot this down as hard as he could. I don't think that Mullen's a real candidate for the Cowboys job. I don't. But apparently, just given the somewhat cryptic way in which he tries to answer this, it seems like he must think that that helps his reputation a little bit. So there are a lot of programs out there that can say a lot of things about Georgia right now. Mullen in Florida is not one of them. So we will rally around our Gator hater pride here for a moment and say, I don't think that Dan Mullen's taking that Florida job. There are lots of Coach of the Year awards to come out. To be frank, I can't keep up with all of them. There's a million of them. I guess the one of the ones that has come out recently has named Ed Orgeron National Coach of the Year. This, for me, is as good a name as any. There are probably some worthy guys to discuss in terms of this Coach of the Year thing. And a lot of people are going to say, well, Ed Orgeron's deal was more about what Joe Brady did offensively. You know, I get that. At one point in time, we would have said something similar about the way that Dave Aranda was running that defense. Interesting to find out that Aranda's probably not staying at LSU for another year after it looks like some of these head coaching jobs are starting to get filled, including the UNLV job that he was at one point in time rumored for. Here's the one thing I'm going to say about Orgeron, and I'm going to keep saying this over and over again. When you give hot takes like I do, hundreds of them a day, every single day, every day of the year, some of them are just bound to be really wrong. And one of the things that I was really wrong about, I believe, is Ed Orgeron. When we had Brad Nessler on the show, we talked about this last week. Orgeron, y'all, is not a cartoon character. He's a coach. And he's going to be a thorn in Kirby Smart's side for as long as he stays at LSU. And he's going to be a thorn in Nick Saban's side for as long as he stays at LSU. You know, the last eight quarters for Georgia against Orgeron have not gone very well. And Joe Brady wasn't a part of that a year ago. So National Coach of the Year, this is not the Ed Orgeron Appreciation Show necessarily, but a really good coach, better than his demeanor would suggest. I believe that's true. Also, he's more than just one of these guys that, hey, he's a good coach as long as he's got good assistants. Because that's probably the other thing I would have said about Orgeron. I think Orgeron's plenty himself an architect of a program, plenty himself a leader for that LSU program. And I think based on the way his team played on Saturday, if nothing else, National Coach of the Year for Ed Orgeron, that probably makes a lot of sense. All right, a couple more stories as part of our cruise around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. A couple decommitments to mention to you. You may have seen Major Burns, pretty good defensive back out of former LSU commit. He is now back on the open market. So LSU is one of those programs that, you know, sometimes we talk about numbers being tight. For LSU in recruiting this year, just given the way that program has really
I mean, it's just attacked. It was actually doing well in recruiting before it had the great season on the field, and now the very good on-field season makes the recruiting efforts even easier, and there's just not maybe room for everybody. Maybe Major Burns, one of those guys that kind of gets lost in the shuffle there. But Burns, now on the open market, is going to get a lot of SEC attention, maybe even for a program that you know pretty well. So we'll follow that. And then another name now on the open market is Avante Williams, a former Oregon commit, another guy that's kind of been talked around in some SEC circles. So Williams now kind of back on the market here as well. So it's this time of year when a lot of guys commit, but also a couple of decommitments sort of change the landscape. And the Burns decommitment, the Williams decommitment, at least a bit, we'll get some SEC players kind of back involved on this again. So we'll follow these stories and see where they go. That's Cruiser in the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And here on Dog Nation Daily, let me kind of get into the Joshua Braun stuff for a minute. Braun does decommit from Georgia. He gave Jeff Centell a quote. You can read the entire story at DogNation.com. But Braun pretty frank about his decision to move on from this class. He says, due to Coach Pittman leaving, I have taken a step back and reassessing my commitment. He says, my commitment was to play for Coach Pittman, but since he's no longer there, the commitment is void. Now, people will say, well, you're supposed to commit to a school and not a coach, and that's one of those things that's easier said than done. People are what attracts you to anything in life, a job, you know, a neighborhood, and certainly a school to attend for 3 to 4 years. I don't fault Braun for using Pittman as a big part of his decision to commit to Georgia. I don't fault him for that. Certainly it's understandable, you know, why now he might want to reassess. Yesterday, on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger, Jeff Centell went into a little bit more detail about why for Braun in particular this decision was going to be very challenging, just given the nature of the fact that his situation, because of when he's planning on enrolling, a little bit different than some of those other Georgia offensive line guys. Here is Jeff from yesterday on Joshua Braun.
Obviously, he was very positive about it, and they're such good people, good family. That was one of the most structured and researched and put together well. They had their 3 or 4 prongs they were always looking for. Just a really smart way of going about a recruiting process, and they put that one to bed a long time ago, Brandon.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing to think about is, you know, this is the first time where we're talking about a guy that, you know, they're far away from Athens, Georgia. And now really quickly, you've got to sit there and figure out, you know, that's so far away. That's a – you know, half a day's worth of drive away. I feel good about that man in a short amount of time to be with my son and kind of be with him more than anybody else in college. I think that's the quick – it's almost like speed dating now again with Matt Luke and Georgia or whatever. Does he go stay closer to Florida now? Does he think about South Carolina? Those were his two other finalists. And this is the hardest, I think, here for Joshua Braun because he's the one that is enrolling early.
Yeah, so listen, it's that early enrollee stance and all of this that I think makes this really, really challenging. And even with the hire of Matt Luke, as good as it was always going to be hard to hold on to all these offensive linemen. We have now seen one leave the fold for the Georgia class. Maybe he reconsiders, probably won't. But now the job for Georgia is to hold on to the rest of these guys. Hey, one more thing real quick. You know, for a lot of you, the NFL season now takes center stage. You know, the college football season takes a little bit of a break. And one of the ways to make NFL games more interesting, more fun, is to get some action down on the games. My advice to you is to use my friends at MyBookie for the place to place your action to make your bets on any kind of football game. When you use the promo code DOGNATION, you can get a big first deposit bonus as well. Up to $1,000, your first deposit can be doubled, but you got to use the promo code DOGNATION. Simply find MyBookie online, type it in your browser, the internet will do the rest of the work for you, then use the promo code DOGNATION. Get a big first deposit bonus, then after that, you play, you win, you get paid with MyBookie, but you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION. All right, before we wrap up, let me also say one thing here really quickly, and I'm not quite sure what to add to this. Some people have told me that Andy Staples from one of the subscription sites in a recent like mailbag type thing or whatever alluded to Georgia trying to hire Mike Bobo before Bobo ended up going to South Carolina. I'm not quite sure what to make of that, but my guess is it probably turns into a little bit of a thing because obviously for you know, a lot of Georgia fans, sometimes it's kind of hard to know what's really going on behind the scenes on stuff like this because Kirby keeps his cards very close to his vest. He promoted 2 coordinators a year ago and didn't say much about it along the way, and making overtures to a guy like Bobo, maybe like some of the guys he may have made overtures last year. He's just not going to reveal too much about that one way or another. But that's an interesting news nugget, I guess, that's out there. 1,139 days, that's how long it's been since Florida's beaten Georgia. This is Dog Nation Daily, and we'll see you again tomorrow.